a CDI podcast. Ava, where do you buy your clothes from?
Oh, I haven't bought clothes in a while. If anything, most recently I've been ordering clothes off of Amazon for like costumes or like random quick events that I need to go get clothes for.
What do you know about fast fashion, if anything?
Mostly that companies will produce things in mass production in order to get with the trends, making clothes as quick as they can to keep up with the trends.
I'm also here with
Sanai.
Sanai, where do you get your clothes from?
Usually like H&M, but most of the time I go to H&M for like basics and stuff, but I shop everywhere online, like Amazon, Shein, like Princess Polly, different things like that. Yeah.
And why do you choose those type of stores?
I feel like it's pretty easy and it's like really convenient, but most of the time I shop at H&M because it's really right there next to me and it's really good for like basic outfits so I can dress it up with anything in my closet.
Joshua, where do you buy your clothes from?
I also buy mine from H&M, just malls, and I do buy a lot of things online too, so yeah.
Okay, and what makes you drawn to clothing stores like that?
Just at the availability and how quick it is, you feel me? Like, how fast I can just get the clothes real quick, and yeah, let's see. Time. Yeah, convenience, yeah, literally, yeah.
Hi, I'm Cam.
Cam, where do you get your clothes from?
Shein, absolutely. It's cheap. I think that's my main thing is being a college student, we're broke.
You're standing in your favorite store, surrounded by rows of the latest and hottest fashion trends, each one promising to make you look and feel like the ultimate fashion icon.
Or maybe you're scrolling through an online catalog, your cursor hovering over that add to cart button.
Maybe you're rushing to grab something quick before an event, hoping to snag the perfect outfit.
But in the midst of this fashion frenzy, have you ever paused to think about the journey of those trendy pieces? Do you ever wonder about the hands that stitch them together, the resources consumed to create them, or the impact they'll have on our planet?
My name is Portia Cook.
And my name is Mia Daly. And we're back with Season 2, Episode 3 of Heat Waves of Change. In this episode, we're investigating the world of fast fashion, where trends are born in the blink of an eye and clothing is easier to access than ever before. But it's not just about clothing anymore. Fast fashion spans everything from makeup to accessories and everything in between. But what exactly makes fast fashion different from your typical fashion trends? How did it all kick off? And how has it changed over time? Plus, what's the deal with fast fashion's impact on climate change and its connection to democratic values and consumer habits? We can't deny the environmental mess fast fashion creates. From pumping out carbon emissions to polluting water and piling up textile waste.
And who's really paying the price for fast fashion's cheap labor practices? In this episode, we'll keep digging into our exploration of misinformation and disinformation to help answer some of these questions. We'll hear from Ewan Pert, an apparel and merchandising student at Colorado State University, as they share their insights and experiences in navigating the world of fast fashion.
Later on in the show, we'll hear from an esteemed researcher who is making waves in the world of fashion sustainability, Dr. Sonali Didi. Dr. Didi is an associate professor in the Department of Design and Merchandising at Colorado State University, where she also serves as an engaged faculty lead for the Office of Engagement and Extension.
At CSU, Dr. Didi leads the Fashion Sustainability Research Collaborative, a pioneering initiative dedicated to unraveling the complexities of sustainability within the global fashion industry. With a keen focus on the entire fashion supply chain, from production to consumption, Dr. Didi and her team explore the environmental and social challenges posed by this multifaceted industry.
The global fashion industry, as Dr. Didi emphasizes, is one of the least sustainable sectors, with its detrimental impacts reverberating across the biosphere. From hazardous chemicals to CO2 emissions and textile waste, the toll on our planet is staggering. Moreover, issues such as child labor and poor working conditions remain pervasive.
However, amidst these challenges, Dr. Didi sees opportunities for innovation and change. Through cutting-edge research and collaboration with entities such as Donna Inc. and Fibershed, Dr. Didi and her colleagues are at the forefront of developing sustainable solutions for the fashion industry. Their work not only benefits local and regional communities, but also contributes to the global dialogue on fashion sustainability. Fast fashion is the quick and cheap clothing you see everywhere these days. The fast part? Well, that's all about how quick stores can get runway looks onto their racks.
I always give an analogy of think of fast fashion as fast food. And if fast food is not good for you, and this is the same thing for fast fashion, not good for you, not good for the planet, not good for the people who are making these products. Fast food, why is it not good? It's cheap, made quick, low quality materials, and again, not good for health. Similarly, fast fashion, it's using cheap materials made by people who are paid really, really less. So think about 20 cents per hour kind of working wage, and cheap quality materials, exploiting labor. And again, very short product life cycle. So that means you're going to wear it for 4 or 5 times and then you're going to toss it. And because it's not made with good materials, it harms the earth because it's not going to decompose in the earth. It's more synthetic based. So all in all, not good for people, planet, and also just for the environment.
Let's take a closer look at some examples of fast fashion brands. You've probably heard of giants like Zara, H&M, and Forever 21. These brands have mastered the art of delivering trendy, affordable clothing to the masses at an unprecedented pace. But fast fashion isn't limited to just clothing. It also extends to makeup brands like ColourPop, clothing and accessory retailers like Fashion Nova, and big names like Urban Outfitters, Pretty Little Thing, American Eagle, and Old Navy, to name a few. These companies produce new products at a crazy fast speed, keeping consumers hooked with their ever-changing collections.
Forget about waiting for the typical spring, summer, or winter fall collections. According to Sustainability Chic, fast fashion brands are cranking out new styles every week. Yep, that's 52 micro seasons a year. It's like a never-ending fashion party, and everyone's invited.
But here's the thing. Because we're paying peanuts for our threads, we tend to care less about them. It's become totally normal to rock something a handful of times before tossing it aside. With clothes cheaper than ever and just a few clicks away online, we're not exactly forming lifelong bonds with our wardrobe anymore. It's a bit of love 'em and leave 'em situation.
Mia, have you ever noticed how fast fashion has totally changed the way we shop for clothes? It's all about those quick, cheap trends now, rather than investing in pieces that last. I mean, even I've gotten sucked into it. Last year, I finally caved and I tried out Fashion Nova after seeing their ads plastered all over my Instagram. And it honestly really kind of felt new for me. You know, being a millennial and all, I've always been big on to going into stores, trying stuff on, and making sure I'm getting my money's worth, first and foremost. But man, let me tell you, once I started browsing on Fashion Nova, I did go a bit wild. The clothes were super cute and the prices were super low, like under $20 low. So it was very, very easy for me to get caught up in the whole fast fashion thing. But guess what? It hasn't always been this way and it doesn't have to stay this way either. So to really understand where we're at and where we could be headed in terms of sustainable and ethical fashion, we need to rewind a bit and dig into the roots of fast fashion.
So, picture this. It's the 1990s, and the New York Times coins the term fast fashion to describe Zara's lightning speed process of getting clothes from design to store shelves in just 2 weeks. But hold up. Fast fashion roots actually go all the way back to the 18th and 19th centuries during the Industrial Revolution.
Before then, making clothes was a whole different ballgame. Skilled artisans crafted garments by hand, and only the wealthy could afford custom-made pieces. But then along came the Industrial Revolution with its fancy new technologies like the sewing machine. Suddenly, companies were cranking out textiles faster than ever before, overshadowing those local tailors and weavers.
But it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows. With the rise of mass production came some pretty dark stuff, like sweatshops and horrendous working conditions. I mean, imagine working 15 to 20 hour shifts in a factory. It was rough.
Then, in the 1940s and 50s, World War II rolls around and fast fashion hops on the production line bandwagon. Clothing gets simpler, standardized, and suddenly everyone's buying more of it thanks to post-war prosperity.
Fast forward to the 1970s, and companies start shipping production overseas to places like China and Latin America for cheaper labor and less regulation. Enter NAFTA in the 90s, and boom, globalization hits the fashion industry like a ton of bricks.
Nowadays, we're in the era of weekly collections and breakneck production schedules. Companies are busting out trends faster than you can say fast fashion, fueled by massive advertising budgets and a hunger for constant consumption.
And while the shift to fast fashion change is sometimes celebrated as the democratization of fashion, offering the latest styles to all consumer groups, the risk to human and environmental health posed by inexpensive clothing are tucked away through each garment's life cycle. This rapid turnover in fashion trends might seem exciting for consumers eager to stay ahead of the fashion game, but it comes at a cost.
Fast fashion isn't just about what's hot in our closets anymore. It's got some pretty serious consequences that reach way beyond our fashion choices. We're talking about environmental damage, people being taken advantage of in the workforce, and even shaping how we see ourselves and others in society.
Fast fashion has changed the industry a lot just because it is cheap. And it is cheap because it is using synthetic fibers, which are petrochemical-based, fossil fuel-based, which makes it cheap. So direct impact on the environment, because one, as it degrades, it's never going to degrade in the soil. It's polyester or any of these synthetic fibers. So direct impact on climate, just even for production of the synthetic fibers. So huge greenhouse gas footprint for synthetic fibers, both in production, consumption, and when I say consumption, is the consumer use. So every time one of us is washing our synthetic fibers, it's that many microplastics entering waterways. So that's, again, not good. So production, consumption, even post-consumption, synthetic fibers are not great from a climate perspective.
Fast fashion's environmental toll is staggering. Did you know it takes a jaw-dropping 700 gallons of water to produce a single cotton shirt? And you don't even want to know what it takes to make a pair of jeans, but I'm going to tell you anyway. A mind-boggling 2,000 gallons of water. And let's not forget about textile dyeing, the second largest polluter of water.
In the global textile supply chain, the journey begins with textile production, where both natural and synthetic fibers are created. In the United States, a staggering 90% of clothing is crafted from cotton or polyester, both linked to significant health impacts during manufacturing. Polyester, derived from oil, and cotton, demanding copious water and pesticides for cultivation, pose environmental and health risks. Textile dyeing compounds these hazards, with untreated wastewater often contaminating local water systems, releasing heavy metals and toxins detrimental to both animals and nearby residents. But the damage doesn't stop there. Microplastics, those tiny pieces of non-biodegradable plastic, a startling 35% of ocean microplastics come from washing synthetic textiles like polyester. And with 80 billion new clothing pieces churned out each year, the problem only worsens. Polyester, one of fast fashion's most widely used manufactured fibers, is made from petroleum, making its production inherently tied to the fossil fuel industry. According to figures from the technical textile market, demand for polyester has nearly doubled in the last 15 years, contributing to air and water pollution. And the manufacturing process of it all releases volatile organic compounds, particulate matter, and acid gases, posing serious health risks to workers and nearby communities.
These emissions have been linked to respiratory diseases and exacerbate environmental pollution. Additionally, wastewater from polyester manufacturing plants releases volatile monomers, solvents, and other byproducts, contributing further to environmental contamination. Many textile manufacturing facilities are classified as hazardous waste generators by the EPA under the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act.
Environmental and safety concerns extend beyond synthetic fabrics to natural fibers like cotton. In the United States, which is one of the largest exporters of cotton globally, this crop accounts for a significant portion of pesticide use, estimated at a quarter of all pesticides according to the USDA. Subsidies provided to the U.S. cotton industry keep prices low and production high, fueling the globalization of fashion by promoting excessive cotton production at artificially low prices. A good chunk of the cotton grown in the U.S. ends up overseas, especially in places like China, where labor is cheaper. There, they work their magic, turning that cotton into fabrics and stitching up garments to match the latest fashion trends.
In the end, a staggering 80 billion pieces of fresh clothing find their way into consumers' hands every year, resulting in a whopping $1.2 trillion in revenue for the global fashion industry. China and Bangladesh lead the pack in production, while the United States stands as the top consumer of clothing and textiles worldwide. Astonishingly, 85% of the clothing Americans purchase, totaling nearly 3.8 billion pounds annually, ultimately ends up in landfills, contributing to approximately 80 pounds of solid waste per person each year. According to A Day in the Life of a Fast Fashion Worker by Atmos, in the heart of Malaysia, within the confines of a stark factory compound enclosed by towering brick walls topped with menacing barbed wire, Robin begins his day. It's 6 o'clock a.m. and the sun has yet to cast its light over the factory grounds. Robin rouses from his mattress, one of many cramped together in a room housing dozens of his fellow workers. As he steps out of his makeshift dorm, he's greeted by a scene of exhaustion and quiet determination, the daily routine of factory life about to unfold.
But behind the facade of a routine lies a reality far removed from what Robin has anticipated. Once a hopeful civil engineering student from Bangladesh, he was lured by the promise of opportunity, an office job in Malaysia. Yet, upon arrival, he found himself thrust into the relentless grind of a garment factory, his passport confiscated, his dreams shattered.
With every passing hour, Robin's ordeal unfolds, his day marked by the relentless pressure of production quotas, the physical toll of repetitive labor, and the constant fear of retribution for any misstep. His supervisor's harsh words echo in his ears as he struggles to navigate the complexities of the sewing machine, his hands trembling from fatigue and frustration.
But Robin is not alone in his struggle. Alongside him, Moyne shares a similar tale of hardship, a relentless cycle of pressure and exhaustion, where dignity and basic rights are sacrificed at the altar of profit.
As the day wears on, Robin's body grows numb, his muscles aching from hours spent hunched over his workstation. The promise of a brief break during lunch is overshadowed by the reality of meager meals and unsanitary conditions, a stark reminder of the dehumanizing nature of factory life.
Despite the challenges, Robin perseveres. Each hour, each stitch, a testament to his resilience in the face of adversity. But behind the facade of productivity lies a deeper truth, a system built on exploitation, where the voices of workers like Robin are drowned out by the relentless pursuit of profit.
As the factory gates close for the night, Robin's thoughts turn homeward, his weary body yearning for rest amidst the stifling heat of his cramped dormitory. Yet, even in the darkness, hope flickers, a flicker of defiance against a system that seeks to crush his spirit.
For Robin, the journey is far from over, but amidst the harsh realities of fast fashion, his story serves as a poignant reminder, a reminder of the human cost behind every garment and the urgent need for change in an industry built on exploitation and injustice.
For many, this is the stark reality lurking behind the glitz and glamour of the fast fashion world, a reality where workers like Robin enduring long hours, grueling conditions, and meager paychecks just to keep the industry churning. It's a tough pill to swallow, seeing the human cost behind every trendy garment we wear. As we hear Robin's story and glimpse into the lives of countless others like him, it's a wake-up call to the harsh truths about fast fashion. Now, let's talk about the human cost. Behind all of the glitz and glam, there's a darker side to fast fashion. Did you know that 80% of apparel workers are young women aged 18 to 24? Many face exploitation and unsafe working conditions, and reports of forced and child labor in countries like Argentina, Bangladesh, and India are chilling reminders of this reality.
But many workers in fast fashion production are slaving away for peanuts, making as little as 12 to 18 cents an hour. And it's not just China. Countries all over the map, from Honduras to Bangladesh, are jumping on the fast fashion train, chasing after those low production costs, even if it means treating their workers poorly.
Safety standards in these regions are often pretty lax. Why? Well, it boils down to poor political infrastructure and management. This laxity exposes workers to a slew of hazards, from respiratory problems due to crummy ventilation to musculoskeletal issues from repetitive tasks. Remember those health concerns that sparked textile labor unions in the US and UK back in the day? Well, now they're hitting hard in low and middle income countries. We're talking everything from lung disease and cancer to reproductive issues and accidental injuries. And let's not forget the devastating events like the 2013 Rana Plaza collapse in Bangladesh. That highlights just how dire the situation can get. But despite these tragedies, safety standards for workers haven't seen much improvement.
One of the most difficult ways for people to tell if a brand's being ethical or not is because brands don't have to report everything that goes on in their factories, and they don't have to report every single step of the way. So as long as they're like at the front being like, wow, we're really ethical. And then when they're selling things, they're like, yeah, we're totally ethical. But in the middle part, no one sees anything that's going on, and no one's required to report that stuff. Obviously, we've all heard about sweatshops, and we all know about the existence of those. Generally, you find stuff like that in like South Asia, Southeastern Asia. That's generally where you find that kind of thing, as well as, around that area. In the Middle East, that's kind of where that kind of stuff happens. The States and like China and Korea and the UK, they all find these countries and they're like, well, they have cheap labor, let's go hire that company. And they're like, well, they say they're completely ethical, but they don't like go to the production factory and they don't see what's going on there. So it's a lot of closed doors, everything's fine. You go in there, you can see some bad things.
If you're thinking about the producers, I would say from the brand perspective, they're just saying, okay, we are going to get the most trendy stuff at the best price point, very cost effective to our consumers. And that's a choice which brands are making, thinking that the consumers really need it, that it needs to be cheap for them to be able to do it. And if you think about the makers, they don't have a choice. It is their livelihoods, period. If they have to survive, if they have to feed their family, they need to manufacture it. It's something which they have no say in their decision making. The brands are the entities which have the decision making of, do we want to create this cheap clothes and this continuous cycle of waste entering into the landfills? And also consumers, because then consumers are not aware of the effects of their decisions because it's not talked about a lot.
Go-to spots like Zara, Forever 21, and H&M are all about giving us the latest looks without emptying our wallets. But here's the thing. While we're scoring those sweet deals, the fast fashion industry is doing some serious damage to our planet. According to the UN Environment Program, it's gulping down water like there's no tomorrow and pumping out carbon emissions like it's going out of style. More than what planes and ships emit combined. And here's the kicker. Most of us aren't even clued in on the extent of the harm. Earth.org laid out some sobering stats too. Fashion production alone is responsible for a whopping 10% of the world's carbon emissions. That's as much as the entire European Union. And brace yourself. All of that manufacturing is drying up water sources, polluting rivers, and stuffing landfills with a mind-boggling 80% of unused textiles every year. And when we throw our clothes in the wash, yeah, we're chucking up about 500,000 tons of microfibers straight into the ocean annually, which is like tossing about 50 billion plastic bottles.
Qantas International report broke it down even further, pointing fingers at dyeing and finishing, yarn prep, and fiber production as the main culprits behind the industry's pollution mess. And if that's not bad enough, the UN says emissions from textile manufacturing are set to skyrocket by a whopping 60% by 2030 if we don't change our ways.
Zara can whip up a new design in just 2 weeks, Forever 21 in 6, and H&M in 8. It's fast and it's easily accessible for us, but at what cost? All of those cute clothes hitting the shelves in a record time, they're just piling up into a mountain of waste.
Once we buy these clothes, about 1/5 of them end up hanging in our closets, adding to what experts call the national wardrobe. Sounds fancy, right? But really, it's just a fancy way of saying we've got a ton of clothes piling up at home. And guess what? All that excess eventually ends up in the trash. In fact, Americans toss out over 68 pounds of clothing and textiles per person every year, making up about 4% of our garbage. And that number, it's only getting bigger. So it's clear, fast fashion may make us look good, but it's a bad look for the environment and many of those working in fast fashion production.
Ah, yes, Instagram famous stores.
21 million people follow Fashion Nova. 4 million people follow those fancy flowers. And hundreds of thousands more follow hundreds of thousands other stores. And like most things that get famous on the internet, even stores will move to Los Angeles. Heck, almost a million people follow me. So as an Instagram famous shopper, who better to try them out? So today I'm playing Inception and taking you to Instagram famous shops. Actual shops.
So are they catfish or are they fabulous? There's only one way to find out.
You've probably seen it all over Instagram, right? Influencers flaunting their outfits, complete with discount codes to snag those pieces for yourself. Plus, there's targeted advertising, where platforms like Instagram and TikTok show you ads for clothes similar to what you've been eyeing.
Social media algorithms, those sneaky behind-the-scenes machines that we talked about in our last episode, are stirring up the fast fashion craze.
And you know those personalized recommendations you get on your feed? Well, those are all thanks to algorithms analyzing your likes, shares, and clicks to tailor content just for you. And then there are influencers. They're like your stylish besties showing off the latest looks from fashion brands.
Social media has really increased a lot of people's demand for products that look like what maybe like Jason Tatum's wearing to the Celtics game, or Allison Breeze wearing to this or that red carpet. You never know who we're like, we want to be, but we all see something awesome and we're like, well, there's something like a quarter as good as that, but it's like $20 on Shein.
Social media algorithms drive impulse buying and trend-driven consumption by tailoring content to user interests.
However, there are ethical concerns. Algorithms prioritize engagement over sustainability, promoting overconsumption and environmental degradation.
And influencers play a big role, often endorsing fast fashion products. But there's a lack of transparency with sponsored content, blurring the lines between genuine recommendations and ads.
TikTok Shop's review feature, for example, showcases products, but authenticity may be questioned due to undisclosed partnerships.
And fake positive reviews further mislead consumers, skewing perceptions of product quality.
Despite these challenges, consumer behavior is heavily influenced by social media trends, especially among younger demographics. According to Growth Collective, as of 2020, the top three biggest social media ad spenders are Fashion Nova at $40 million, Flat Tummy Company at $13.5 million, and Ciroc at $11.8 million, followed by Walmart, Pretty Little Thing, Luca Belair, Carolita Lemke, BoomBod, Calvin Klein, and Sugar Bear Hair.
Literally, I was talking to one of my classmates recently, and she had seen something on, I think it was Shein, and then 2 days later, she went to the thrift store, and it was more expensive at the thrift store than on Shein's website. So the cheapness of it, you're like, what am I supposed to do? Clothing's clothing at the end of the day. But I mean, for me, I have a couple dollars to spend. I don't find myself doing that very often because I try to stay to like quote unquote eco-friendly. I try to thrift as much as I can since that's really the most effective way to both be a part of my community and also not waste clothing the way that Shein and Zara and et cetera do all the time. So it's really, for me, I don't feel that pressure as often. But I do really understand a lot of the people around me who do feel that pressure, because it's like, we don't have $200 to spend on a pair of jeans that are just like a blue wash. I'll go to the thrift and get something that's like two sizes too big and I'll be fine. But for a lot of people, they're like, I could spend those $200 on these jeans, or I could get four pairs of jeans for $50. I'd go for the $50 one. So I think that social media really, I think it's the comparison between people more than each brand.
Social media algorithms and influencers are driving the fast fashion frenzy, keeping us hooked on the latest trends and urging us to click buy now.
But in the midst of all the fast fashion frenzy, it's important to remember that transparency and ethics are key to responsible shopping. When mass-produced clothes became a thing, people thought it would make fashion more fair for everyone. The idea was that since ready-to-wear styles were available to everyone, it would level the playing field. But here's the thing. Even though ready-to-wear fashion brought in new styles and ways to express yourself, it kinda ended up favoring one specific body type. According to a 2021 study on democracy in female fashion, research showed that the industry mostly focused on one ideal body shape, slim and young. Today, the mainstream fashion industry continues to stick to one particular look, which can limit what consumers feel comfortable wearing. This limitation means that people might not feel like they have much say in what's considered fashionable, which kind of goes against the idea of fashion democracy, the idea that everyone should have a voice in what's trendy.
The connection between democracy and fast fashion runs deep, touching on issues like transparency, corporate responsibility, and the power of consumer choice. When we talk about transparency, it's often a missing piece in the fast fashion puzzle. Many brands keep their supply chains and practices under wraps, making it tough for us as shoppers to know what we're really supporting with our purchases. According to Fashion Revolution's Fashion Transparency Index, which assesses the transparency of the world's largest fashion brands, the industry as a whole lacks transparency, with an average score of only 23% in 2021.
Democracy. I would feel that people have the will to do what they want and what benefits them the best and make those decisions. Unfortunately, in the fashion industry, there is people who are making it, people who are suffering the after effects of all the chemicals and manufacturing effects, don't have a say, and that's very undemocratic. And I think from a consumer point of it, they have the choice to say no to fast fashion brands who exploit other countries, communities, democratic powers. You can play it both ways, is consumers can choose to use that those powers which they have. And most of these consumers are in developed or, you know, highly developing countries, to say no to these irresponsible choices and production of what the fast fashion companies are doing.
Corporate accountability is another biggie. Some fast fashion giants prioritize profits over things like fair wages and environmental impact. Without checks and balances, they can get away with cutting corners that hurt both people and the planet. Numerous reports and investigations have uncovered instances of labor exploitation and environmental harm within the fast fashion industry. For example, the documentary The True Cost highlights the human and environmental costs of fast fashion, including unsafe working conditions and pollution.
And let's not forget about policy and the global trade game. Trade laws sometimes give companies a free pass to produce cheap goods in countries with minimal regulations. This floods markets like the U.S. with fast fashion, adding to the challenges of transparency and accountability. Trade laws and agreements often prioritize corporate interests over environmental and labor standards. The Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, for example, faced criticism for its potential to undermine labor and environmental protections.
Policymakers, huge role for policymakers, because unless policy requires it, they're not going to do it. Classic example, EU now has policy around extended producer responsibility. It has policy around textile sustainability, and not on putting it on consumers, but putting it on brands and asking them, what is your plan after consumer finishes using this product? The policy also requires that any unsold garments cannot be incinerated, which is a very normal practice in our industry because it's so cheap that you can't do anything. So you're just going to burn them off. So now EU has stopped that practice and asking more transparency with fashion brands about what are they going to do with products after. So kind of thinking the circular economy and making sure that there's a, you know, a good recycling industry, but also thinking about materials right at the design stage, what materials are to be used. That's happening in EU. They put that out last year, and now all the brands are scrambling. Unfortunately, in the US, it takes time. I think it will come 10 years or so to the US, and I'm hoping that global brands, once they make a change for EU market, they'll make that change for the US too. But I think US needs to work a lot on the textiles and clothing policy. In the US, California is at the forefront of this, especially the elimination of PFAS. It's a chemical to eliminate PFAS in products, in clothing products. So they're working on, again, bringing this conversation around manufacturing, soil health, waterways, microplastics. Microplastic, again, a huge problem in our industry. But they're actually in advocacy in a nonprofit group, which is working with their legislation to make those changes in California. So something to look out would be the EU policy and at California policy around PFAS, textiles, microplastics, all of that. Think about it in Fort Collins here, till we had a policy of no plastic bags. Some of them would do, some of them would forget, and now there's no choice because people either pay or they buy. So then that the policy pushes people to change their behavior in a mandatory way. What I was told how the policy world works is more the communities and people ask those questions. So it has to be very grassroots. So that comes back to consumer awareness. So it does come back to consumer awareness. It does come back to grassroots activism and then group of people asking their government officials to change and having more requirements of, you know, brands and stuff. So it is a very grassroots consumer-driven policy change.
The choices we make can nudge the industry in a more responsible direction. By opting for brands that are transparent about their practices and prioritize ethics and sustainability, we're voting with our wallets for a better fashion future. According to Nelson, a study found that 66% of consumers are willing to pay more for sustainable brands, reflecting a growing demand for ethical and environmentally friendly products.
To really champion democratic values in fashion, we need to get vocal about supporting sustainable practices and pushing for stronger regulations. It's about making informed choices and demanding better from the brands we love. Together, we can stitch together a more responsible and democratic fashion landscape.
The great thing about the internet is that you can really find almost anything that you want. So if you're looking for a more ethical brand, you can be like, best non-pollutionary brand in North America for like this price or this demographic. And then you can type that in. And then there's usually a list with like 15 different brands, and then you can click on each one of those. And then you can start working from there. There's various websites that also let you put in the name of a brand or put in the name of a company, say where their supply chains come from, what they're sourcing. It's easy to just look it up. And then another thing is thrift shops are really the lifeblood of any community. At the end of the day, we all live in the cities that we live in, and we're all trying to help each other out. And like thrift stores like the Ark and Goodwill and that kind of thing, those are the places that we go to like give away what we don't have, the extras that we don't need. And while someone might not need their extra flannel, maybe you're looking for a jacket or needing an extra layer. So if you're looking for something, probably everyone's mom has said this to them at some point, but just go to the thrift real quick. You might like one or two things, and stay there longer than you want to, because, you know, you didn't look through all the racks, and then you find that one thing after like 45 minutes there, and you're like, okay, I guess it was worth it. So stay there a little longer than you wanted to. Consumers do have more power than they think they do. If we all stopped buying from H&M all of a sudden, H&M isn't going to have any money, and they're not going to be able to produce anything, and then suddenly all of their waste isn't going to be created anymore. So, I mean, at the end of the day, be the change that you want to see in the world. So as a consumer, if you don't want fast fashion to continue and you don't want the ramifications of fast fashion to happen, just don't buy it, which is easier said than done.
When we talk about voting with our wallets for a better fashion future, it's not just about personal preferences. It's about shaping the industry landscape. By consciously choosing brands that prioritize transparency and sustainability, we're sending a clear message to the market about our values and expectations. And as Mia mentioned, our voices matter too. Through advocacy and demanding stronger regulations, we can ensure that ethical practices become the norm rather than the exception.
That's right, Portia. It's about taking collective action and recognizing the power we hold as consumers. By supporting sustainable practices and holding brands accountable, we're not only shaping the fashion industry, but also upholding democratic values of fairness, transparency, and social responsibility.
The beauty of the internet lies in its accessibility to information. With just a few clicks, we can find brands aligning with our values and even check the ethical track records of our favorite companies. Plus, let's not forget the treasure trove that thrift shops offer. These community hubs not only promote sustainable fashion, but also embody the spirit of mutual support and collaboration. So as we navigate the fashion landscape, let's remember that every choice we make, big or small, has the power to drive positive change.
Well, everyone, that's all for this episode of Heat Waves of Change. Thank you to our guests, Dr. Sonali Didi and CSU apparel and merchandising student Ewan Pert for joining us. And thank you to all our listeners for tuning in.
Last month in February, we dropped our second episode of our new season introducing and breaking down all things mis and disinformation as they relate to social media algorithms.
In our next episode, we're diving deep into the tangled web of misinformation within the oil and gas industry, an industry known for its big economic influence, but one that hides some serious environmental downsides. Join us next month as we uncover the hidden impacts of the oil and gas industry on the climate crisis and show you how misinformation affects us all right here in Colorado.
If you missed any of our episodes, head over to Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts, or you can subscribe and get access to all of the in-depth storytelling, reporting, and investigative journalism we do right here at CDI.
You can also check us out on social media at official_CDI_. Or check out the work we do on our website, climatedemocracyinitiative.org.
Until next time, stay safe and remember, the clock is ticking and the future of the planet and the state of its democracy lies in our hands.